Welcome to our Blue Papers podcast edition. Blue Papers are our version of white papers here at 4imprint. They cover a wide range of business topics, all with an aim to help your organization succeed. This is episode number 166, Performance Appraisal. This episode is presented by 4imprint Incorporated customer service manager, Brandon Manthe.
Time for a reassessment of the performance appraisal? Managers think they're a bureaucratic chore forced by human resources. Employees approach them with fear and trepidation. No one likes them. Is it time to fire annual performance reviews? Many successful companies are saying yes and finding new, more efficient and effective strategies for managers and employees to engage in frequent two-way conversations, offer feedback, set goals, and raise morale and productivity. Workforce surveys reveal that employees regard the traditional approach to performance reviews as arbitrary and unhelpful to their performance and career goals. The practice, in recent decades, of ranking employees has been shown to destroy morale and force workers to compete rather than collaborate. As companies are forced to readjust their goals and strategies quickly in response to market disruptions, the tradition of a once-a-year, time-consuming performance assessment doesn't keep pace with today's economics. Surely, there's a better way. This podcast will discuss the history of performance reviews, examine the cases for and against retaining performance reviews, and highlight examples of companies that are replacing them. Finally, we'll provide a list of best practices for introducing new strategies that promote communication, development, performance, and accountability. Let's review. While many workers today regard the annual performance review as a top-down, panic-inducing exercise that can result in anything from superficial praise to soul-crushing judgment, there was a time when the practice represented a new, enlightened view of the relationship between bosses and workers. The Industrial Revolution ushered in a new era of work that placed a high value on efficiency, productivity, and quality. The father of economics, Adam Smith, introduced theories on task division and specialization, and unions achieved reforms related to child labor, safety, and the length of the workday. The 1920s saw the birth of the concept of human relations in the workplace, and the Great Depression brought about further advances in pensions, minimum wages, and labor standards. A real shift in management styles became evident in the 1940s, with a greater understanding of group dynamics and the social needs of employees. Businesses learned that when supervisors functioned as leaders and facilitators rather than taskmasters, employee productivity and satisfaction grew. The concept of performance management entered the lexicon in the 1970s, and management by objectives came along in the 1980s. The idea of rating employees emerged in the 20th century as well. The Performance Rating Act of 1950 established three summary ratings for federal employees: outstanding, satisfactory, and unsatisfactory. And the Incentives Reward Act of 1954 provided a means to recognize and compensate government workers for superior performance. General Electric CEO Jack Welch popularized the forced or stacked ranking system in the 1980s, ranking employees on a bell curve, rewarding high performers and getting rid of poor ones. The idea of multi-rater or 360-degree feedback has been around since World War II, but the practice wasn't widely adopted until the 2000s, when the internet began to make it easier to manage large quantities of data. When Yahoo announced it was instituting a performance ranking system, and Microsoft announced it was abandoning its ranking system within days of each other in November 2013, business journalists and management gurus rushed to weigh in on the contrasting decisions of the tech giants, with many commentators coming down against ranking systems, the bell curve in particular. Joshua Brustein of Business Week details why when he says, "Basically, many people have lost faith that ranking employees works, and some research suggests that employee performance doesn't follow a bell curve at all. Instead, most people are slightly worse than average, with a few superstars. And while a bit of pressure can motivate people, constantly pitting employees against one another is terrible for morale. Max Neeson of Business Insider writes that forced rankings are especially harmful for companies in talent-rich industries such as those in Silicon Valley. He says, employees at these companies already feel they're competing against some of the world's smartest people for limited opportunities and recognition. If you tell them they're also competing for their jobs, explicitly, that is, not just in the way we are all every day, it starts to look like a crummy deal. The practice of ranking employees has been found to be detrimental at companies that suffer large-scale layoffs. Once the first wave of employees is gone and the company shrinks, the bell curve forces supervisors to rank some average performers as poor ones, and some high performers as mediocre ones. If a case needs to be made for rethinking the performance review, the results of the Cornerstone On Demand 2013 U.S. Employee Report provide a picture of the extent to which current practices are failing employees and employers. The survey captures employees' perspectives and attitudes regarding performance feedback, training, development, and career management. The results paint a grim picture of the way performance reviews tend to be conducted in the U.S. Here are some of the findings. Number one, some 60% of respondents reported not receiving useful feedback in the past 6 months. Number two, only slightly more than one-third, 38% to be exact, reported that feedback helped them improve their performance. Number three, a mere 35% reported having performance goals aligned with company objectives. Number four, only 1 in 4 respondents reported having established career goals with their manager or employer. Number five, fewer than 30% believe the purpose of their employer's review process was to help them succeed in their role. And number six, fewer than half, 47% actually, believe that the feedback they've received is a fair and accurate representation of their performance. Samuel A. Culbert, a professor in the Anderson School of Management at the University of California, Los Angeles, says that in the traditional performance review systems, employees tend to focus on pleasing their boss rather than achieving results. The author of Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Focus on What Really Matters, reports that empirical studies going back to the 1980s fail to show that performance reviews are fair, accurate, or consistent across managers, or that they improve organizational effectiveness. He says, in my years studying such reviews, I've learned that they are subjective evaluations that measure how comfortable a boss is with an employee, not how much an employee contributes to the overall results. They are an intimidating tool that makes employees too scared to speak their minds, lest their criticism come back to haunt them in their annual evaluations. They almost guarantee that the owners, whether they be taxpayers or shareholders, will get less bang for their buck. Josh Burson, Forbes contributor and founder and principal at Burson by Deloitte, describes traditional performance reviews as, quote, an artifact from traditional top-down organizations where we had to weed out the bottom performers every year. By forcing managers to rate people once a year, we can have annual talent reviews and decide who gets more money, who to promote, and who to let go, unquote. Burson lists these reasons for scrapping the traditional approach and finding new ways to evaluate performance. Number one, employees need and want regular feedback, so a once-a-year review is too late. Regular coaching is the key to alignment and performance. Number two, managers cannot typically judge an entire year of work from an individual at one time. Number three, manager-employee relationships are not one-to-one, so one person cannot adequately rate an employee without peer input. Number four, while some employees are poor fits or poor performers, these issues should be addressed immediately, not once a year. Number five, people are inspired and motivated by positive, constructive feedback, and the appraisal process almost always works against this. And number six, the most valuable part of an appraisal is the development planning conversation. What can one do to improve performance and engagement? And this is often left to a small box on the review form. A final reason to abandon the annual review and replace it with something more frequent relates to the overall decline in job tenure, and especially the short job tenure of millennials. According to a 2014 report from the U.S. Department of Labor, the median tenure of wage and salary workers at a single job is 4.6 years. But for workers ages 25 to 34, median tenure drops to 3 years, which means the practice of annual performance reviews provides the typical millennial with just a couple of evaluations at any one job. David Hassel, CEO of San Francisco-based software company 15Five, says, "Feedback is helpful from an employee standpoint. If it's done more frequently, it may even give employees a reason to stay on the job longer." But wait, if performance reviews aren't working, then why bother? In addition to goals that often include employee retention, development, and compensation, there are legal reasons for companies to retain a framework for a review. Barry Gross, a former vice president and senior corporate counsel for an international Fortune 1000 company, warns that if an employee is disciplined or terminated and the employee does not agree with the action, the company's performance review policy, or lack of performance reviews, may be drawn into any legal proceedings. She says, "Oftentimes the issue that caused the employer to take action could have or would have been addressed in the review. In that case, an employee would be on notice of performance issues as well as the employer's expectations for addressing the issues. By communicating in this way, employers can help a poorly performing employee turn the performance issues around and become a vital contributing member of the workforce. Or, if a poor performance continues, a timely and accurate review helps provide a basis for taking adverse action." Gross also points out that if an annual review is required but is delivered late or not at all, the company's failure to follow its own policies can be used against it. She says, "Failure to deliver timely reviews can be used to paint the manager as uncaring or inadequate in a leadership role. This can be used against the company in a later lawsuit." And those dreaded ranking systems, while acknowledging that they lead to employee morale problems and offer little flexibility to managers, Victor Lippmann, a former manager with MassMutual Financial Group, argues that in his experience, rating systems force managers to have hard conversations with employees that they might otherwise avoid. He says, "As any manager knows, it's often easier to avoid difficult, painful performance-related conversations than to confront them head-on. Though some managers are outstanding in dealing with conflict, many, being after all only human, prefer to avoid or minimize it. It literally forces performance issues to be addressed. For an organization that wants to tighten or formalize its management process, I believe the system can have benefits." So is it possible to replace the traditional performance review with an approach that achieves the same goals, accountability, communication, performance, development, and is viewed by managers and employees alike as a natural and easy process, rather than a necessary evil? Hassel, CEO of 15Five, recommends an approach that involves asking employees these four questions each week. Number one, what are your successes and what's going well? Number two, what challenges are you facing and where do you need help? Number three, do you have any new ideas that could improve your job and/or the company? And number four, how are you feeling and what is the morale around you? If the thought of a weekly meeting sounds like an additional burden, Hassel emphasizes that employees should spend no more than 15 minutes answering the questions, and managers no more than 5 minutes listening to or reading the responses. The goal is quick feedback and engaged employees. He says, "Annual reviews feel burdensome to those who must prepare them. Weekly check-ins are moving, lightweight, and agile." Tim Baker, author of Winners at Work, advocates for an approach he calls the five conversations. This method provides a framework for five conversations managers have with an employee over the course of 6 months. Each conversation should take about 10 minutes, with both managers and employees preparing for the discussion. He says it should be employee-centered. In other words, unlike the traditional performance appraisal, the manager's comments are guided by their employees' contribution. Baker argues that his framework takes the topics of a traditional appraisal and turns them into an ongoing dialogue that is more relaxed, prompting employees to be more honest and direct about developmental needs. It still provides management with information for planning and training needs while feeling more natural and enjoyable. Check out his complete framework in his book or online. Stacey Agar, an analyst with Bearson by Deloitte, says the top three questions she receives about abandoning performance scores are, number one, how do you compensate employees without performance scores? Number two, how do you deal with compliance in countries that require documentation? And number three, how do you identify high potential employees? Gar answers those questions with a case study of Kelly Services, one of the first major companies to abolish performance scores in 2008. Number one, on compensation without scores. Kelly Services provides annual market adjustments as appropriate, given an employee's position within the salary range. Gar says, further, the company has developed an evolved definition of total rewards that reflects the holistic approach the company takes in providing appropriate recompense to employees. This approach includes incentives, recognition, and other rewards. Number two, on documentation requirements. In most countries where Kelly Services operates, this only extends to proving that conversations take place, not recording what is being said. Gar remarks, since performance conversations still most definitely take place at Kelly, this arrangement was not a problem. And number three, on identifying talent. Kelly instituted Senior Leader Talent Summits, forums for leaders to discuss their talent, the development activities that have occurred, and next steps in development. Gar explains, talent summits typically cover discussions of the top 2 to 3 levels of management below the executive level, and a small number of other top talent employees who leaders might wish to highlight. Motorola Solutions also did away with a ranking system and separated performance reviews from compensation. In the new system, managers and employees are required to have ongoing conversations about performance and an annual review to determine if objectives have been met. And bonuses are based on the company's overall performance, with merit pay for top performers. Shelley Carlin, Human Resources Chief at Motorola Solutions, says the new review system reduced the time spent on reviews by 50 to 70%. On to best practices. Seinfeld introduced the world to the holiday of Festivus and its annual airing of grievances. But managers shouldn't spend a year compiling a list of corrections that an employee needs to make and then dumping them on the employee all at once. Sharon Armstrong, author of the Essential HR Handbook, says, there's a wonderful supervisor's mantra, and it's 6 words. When you see it, say it. Make your feedback an ongoing workplace discussion. Turning once-a-year reviews into ongoing dialogue is just one of the best practices companies are adopting when they replace the traditional performance review process. Here are several more. Number one, separate compensation discussions from evaluations. Alex Nabom of Deloitte University Press says, neuroscience research shows that conversations about compensation provoke an almost primordial fight or flight reaction among employees, which obviously inhibits the coaching process. Rather than directly linking ratings and salary increases or bonuses, compensation decisions should be based on the critical nature of an employee's skills, the cost of replacing them, their value to customers, and the external labor market. Number two, develop a feedback-rich culture and set of tools to facilitate feedback. These tools can be formal, informal, or online. Most employee engagement and HR software vendors offer these tools. The key is encouraging employees to give feedback to each other. Number three, don't get too bogged down with forms and reports. Nabom recommends simplifying the process. He says, reduce the number of forms and make them very simple and easy to use. Ignore the advanced features in performance management software. Number four, get buy-in from upper management. A senior executive level conversation will help to define what the organization hopes to achieve from performance management activities and identify the best means to achieve these goals. Number five, focus managers on hiring the best possible employees and developing a team of high achievers. Burson says, this is never 100% possible, of course, but rather than assuming that 20% of your employees will perform poorly, spend more time on assessment, culture, and fit to make sure very few low performers make it into the organization in the first place. Number 6, teach managers to give better feedback. When managers and employees engage in productive performance and developmental conversations on a regular, informal basis, employees are less likely to look outside the company for new employment. And number 7, coach everyone. Remember the employees who are neither stars nor poor performers, the ones in the middle of the bell curve, who would have received the rather uninspiring label of satisfactory under past rating systems? Inspire these employees to see themselves as valued contributors and aim for providing employees at all levels with practical steps and developmental opportunities to advance in the organization. Nabom says, hold everyone accountable, but give everyone coaching, development planning, and training to improve. It may be impossible and detrimental to get rid of all forms of performance assessments, but it is possible to make the process one that develops employees to perform at their best and is no longer regarded by everyone involved as a necessary evil. One key component to new approaches is that they get away from the idea of the performance review as a review with a focus on the past, and instead become an ongoing conversation about the future of the employee and the company. Jacob Schreier of Office Vibe says, performance reviews are basically like saying, let's sit down in a room and look back at what you've done in the past year and see where you went wrong. A smarter idea is to look forward and define goals that you want to hit that are aligned with the company's core values, and then have regular check-ins to see how you're doing on meeting those goals.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on performance appraisal. Keep on the lookout for our next podcast. Get ready to adapt to agile marketing. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to listen to others, please visit our website at 4imprint.com/bluepapers.